I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
Which is why, John, you're no longer allowed to bring kangaroos to Worldcon.
That's, yeah, I know. It's weird when we come in mid-conversation on the cold opens of these shows, you know, from what we were talking about before. You know, Patrick, when we were listening to the theme song playing, I don't know if that was just on my end, but it had sort of a little bit of a slow.
I replace it.
Oh, that's good.
I never actually use the one that we listen to here because it's a little bit quieter.
Okay. Yeah, that's why it was just funny because my son, I found this plugin for Chrome and for YouTube where you can pitch shift YouTube videos. So you can do them like two octaves down or two octaves up. So he loves doing that. And I just sort of change the speed. It's pretty crazy. But anyway, it's sort of like, hey, this is like what's going on in the other room where he's changing the pitch of various YouTube videos. But cool. Well, today, Patrick, we're joined by Stephen Arion. He is a fantasy author. He's got a bunch of books out. He's got Battle Mage, Blood Mage, Chaos Mage, and he's got another one coming out in September. He's got some other projects that he's here to talk about. He's a podcaster. He writes some comics. Got a lot going on. Stephen, thank you for coming on the show today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now,
did you skip his last name on purpose?
What's that?
Did you skip his last name on purpose?
I didn't skip his last name. I said his last name.
No, you didn't.
I didn't say Stephen Arion?
No.
Oh, well, I said it there. There you go. I didn't do it on purpose, but yeah. You know, we were talking. So Stephen is in the UK, so it's 5 hours ahead of my time. And we were talking about how we record this midday my time. So it actually works out for our European friends who come on the show. But we were also talking about, now I'm going to mess up his name. We were talking about our author friend that lives in Israel. And
Levi Tadar.
Yeah, Levi Tadar, how badly I screwed up his name. Screwed up his first name, screwed up his last name. It was like Lavi Tidder. Like, I don't know. I just butchered it. I asked him and he got it, but that was one I really like wrote down and phonetically spelled it and everything else. But Stephen, thanks for coming on the show. As I mentioned, your books, now over here in the US, those books were put out, have been put out through Orbit. Is that correct?
Yes. It's Orbit worldwide, UK, USA, and Australasia as well.
Awesome. Great. Yeah. Now these are books that, you know, as we talk about on the show quite frequently, it's a blessing and a curse to get all these books because it's wonderful to have them, but you can never get through them all. And I feel like your books have been on my to-be-read pile for quite a long time. And I've been wanting to get to them, which is why I was so excited that we're getting you on the show. Because I'm like, yeah, we got to get Stephen on the show. And maybe that'll put those books up higher on my to-be-read list. I know you're here to talk about a couple different things, but maybe you can give our listeners quick little snapshot of what that series is about.
Yes. So it's strange because my first book came out in 2015, but you know, the road to get there was a long time. And then a couple of years before that, I was editing it with my agent and then my editor at Orbit. So it feels like I've been doing this for a long time, but actually it's only been like 2 years since I've been published. So it's very, very weird, but there you go. And also Orbit do that thing for debut authors where they do an accelerated release schedule. So the first book came out and then the second one was 6 months later and the third one 6 months after that. So they gave me more time up front. And within a year, 3 books have come out, which is really weird.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, John and I have been podcasting now for quite a while, but it feels like we started in 1912.
Yeah, I have that too. I've been podcasting for 10, almost 11 years, and I feel like one of the oldest people in podcasting. There's two guys that I know who are older than me that do it. Apart from that, it's, you know, our podcast is called Grouchy Old Geeks for a reason because we just moan about stuff, but that's okay. I'm all right with that. I've accepted my position in the world.
Every time I feel that way, I think about Murr, and then I realize I'm not that old in podcasting years. Murr was one of the first ones, you know, and so it helps a little bit, you know. And she still has the passion for it, so I'm hoping that, you know, in 20 years I'll still have the passion for it too.
I'm hoping I'll still be alive in 20 years if you have the passion. I'll worry about that later.
Yeah, Stephen, when you were saying that your the first three books were released essentially within a year, year and a half, how I'm just curious, what has been your experience with that? Do you think that was a good way to go? Do you think that was helpful to your career? Would you rather space them? Like, what are your thoughts on having three books out in such a short period of time?
I think it's generally quite good, because if a new author comes along, whoever it might be, and you're interested and you pick up their first book and you really enjoy it, you think, oh great, when's the next one coming out? And it's a year's time. Sometimes you kind of forget, because there's so much content out there now, whether it's TV or films or books or games, and you think, oh okay, there's so many more distractions. And also, if you go into a bookshop after a year, the first book might not be on the bookshelf on the shelf anymore. So I think 6 months spacing helps, because people know they don't have to wait as long for the next one. And equally, if you've missed the first one, there's a good chance you can go to your local bookshop and pick up, you know, book one or book two when book three comes out. So I think it kept me in people's minds for about a year whilst they were coming out.
Yeah, and I think I know, for being a big fan of fantasy series, that's been sort of my reading goal over the past year or so, is trying to finish up series that I've started, because we get so many books sent to us, I'm always getting the new stuff and like the hot new author and the debut author. And that's great. I love being exposed to all sorts of different voices, but at the same time, I'm looking down the barrel of 15 different series that I've read book one, really want to read the rest of the series, but have not gotten to it yet. So now I'm kind of going back and be like, what series did I really like? Oh, I really like Brian McClelland's first book. Let me go and get those, the rest of those, and read those. And I'm currently like finishing up all of Brandon Sanderson stuff, which that's a lifetime of reading right there. So
there you go. But, 1,200 pages a book, it certainly
is. Oh yeah, I've been reading Oathbringer for 2 months now. I'm only, you know, 300 pages into the 1200 pages. So it's a lot, but I like it. That's what I like about fantasy. I like long fantasy books. I like sort of getting lost in that world. So to me, that's part of the enjoyment of reading it. I know a lot of people are critical of particularly long books, but I like that about it. So I think kind of putting them out there like that is a good thing, because then I'm assuming fantasy fans in general like series. So when they can go to the bookstore and be like, oh, three books. Okay, great. Let's see what the first one's like. And maybe I'll go pick up this next two, or what have you. So I imagine that is a successful plan. Patrick, I know you often bring up Kevin Hearn as one of the people that they use this strategy with first. Yeah. Yep. So I don't.
And to be honest with you, if you go to some writers' conventions now, and with everybody talking about, you know, indie publishing and the way you can do stuff on your own as a hybrid and all that, if you're doing it on your own, 9 times out of 10, the advice that people are giving you is to release as much content as you can in succession. Over and over and over. Like, so if you have a book that you're going to self-publish, or you're going to push out there on your own, you know, don't just release the one, release two or three.
Right.
You know, and so you have that content to do exactly what Stephen's talking about. It's like, so the reader, you know, you stay in that reader's mind. Mm-hmm. You remember when Forbeck did like the 12 for 12 or something like that?
Yeah.
And he did a book a month for a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, stuff like I did it as a pick quite a few months ago, but it was a perennial seller by Ryan Holiday, and a great, great book on the creative process and also like marketing as well. And one of the things that he talks about in that book is one of the best ways to promote your content is to release more content, is to create more. It keeps more exposure to your older stuff. Now, Stephen, speaking of that, now I know you have the next book in this series coming out. What are some of, do you have any other projects that you want to let our listeners know about?
Yes. So that first trilogy wrapped up, and it's a self-contained story, but just going back a step, also some people wait for the whole series to come out before they pick it up, which can, you know, frustrate the authors and the publishers. So bringing out the first three books in a trilogy within a year, you don't have to wait as long, which was quite good. Because I know some people would say, oh, I'll wait till book three came out. They told me, and I thought, well, you haven't got long to wait now. It's 6 months.
True. I know people who still won't read George R. R. Martin because it's not done yet. They're like, yeah, when he's finished, I'll read it.
So, exactly. Yeah, it's like,
one of them. I'm one of them because I got caught up and then it took years for another book to come out and I just decided to give up.
You're not alone. A lot of people did that for sure.
It's true.
So yeah, so why don't you tell us about what you got coming out now?
Yeah, so the first trilogy is all done. I started a second trilogy set in the same world. The first book, Mageborn, came out October last year. And last week, I just released a digital and audio novella, which is a prequel to everything. So it works if you've never read any of my stuff. You can pick it up and it gives you a complete story. And if you like it, you can then go and read the other books. But also, this took a bit of finicking. If you're up to date with everything and you read this, it'll feed into the current story and it gives you clues about what's to come. So that was a bit tricky to do, but it was good fun.
Now, let me ask you this about that particular one.
Mm.
Now, are you self-publishing that? Is it through the same publisher? What's your sort of business with that?
So it's through Orbit as well. I talked to them about doing some sort of shorts and they said, we're interested. What kind of thing are you thinking about? And I pitched them a few different ideas and they chose one and said, okay, let's go with this one. And because it works as a prequel, I think that's why they were more interested in it than some of the other ideas, because, you know, it's a low price point. If people like it, they can pick it up quite quickly and it's instant because it's Kindle or you know, audio. So yeah, I guess Orbit, because they're my publisher, they're my first call, and they said yes, so that was good.
That's great, because I know a lot of our author friends that we have on the show, they'll, you know, their main books are put out through the major publisher, and then sometimes they'll put out their short stories or novellas independently. So there's always this kind of mix. So that's great that Orbit wanted to put it out too. Then it's all kind of in the same universe. That's very cool. Very cool.
Doesn't Brian McClellan, doesn't he digitally publish his own shorts?
I believe so. I think that's who I was thinking of when you mentioned that.
Yeah, because he's Orbit as well. He's Orbit, same publisher as me, I think.
Mm-hmm. I believe his shorts he puts out on his own, and then the Orbit releases the main books. So that's what I was thinking about with it. Oh, it's a very Orbit heavy show.
Let's talk about something else quickly.
Yeah.
I like the folks at Orbit. I got to meet them in Chicago. They were awesome.
Put out some of the best books that I've read in the past few. Is the Expanse through Orbit? You know what? I think it might be. Anyway.
It might be. I have to
check
now.
Now I got to check. Anyway. Well, you know what? We're going to get on to our picks of the week. But before we do that, I do want to thank our listeners who are backing us over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. It really helps us put on a good show every week. So for the people that are already backing us, thank you so much. If you enjoy the show, if you enjoy interviews like this with Stephen, consider becoming one of our backers. Just go over to patreon.com/functionalnerds. Now let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Stephen, why don't you go first? Let us know what your pick is.
Okay, so my pick of the week is a TV show, which I'm actually watching for a second time. And this is the Punisher TV show on Netflix.
Ooh.
Have you both seen it?
I have.
I have not yet. It's in the queue. I've watched all the other Marvel stuff, but that's kind of next up for me.
Okay. Well, I wanted to talk about it without spoilers for those who haven't seen it, because there's still a lot you can dig into. So when I was first talking about it, go on.
I was just going to say, I think that, and I hope that you're going to touch on this a little bit, but I don't think it's what people think it is.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I was talking about it with a friend who hadn't seen it as well, and this is just after my first watch of it, and he said, oh, I've just started watching it. It seems really slow. There's not a lot of violence in it. I thought, well, if all you want is 13 hours of him shooting people, it's going to get really boring and really dull around hour two.
Yeah.
You could just watch an action film. I mean, I like action films. Sometimes you want something that's just mindless fun and explosion and car chases and, you know, why not? But Marvel have never done that with any of their shows, Netflix shows to date. I thought they're going to have to do something different with this. And they delighted me because they did do something rather unique. We do get some extreme moments of violence, but you'd expect that from the Punisher. But very much we see Frank Castle, the man, who he was before through flashbacks and conversations, and also who he is today and how far he's come. And it doesn't paint the past with rose-tinted glasses, which you would expect. Like, his life before he came to the Punisher was perfect and everything was fine. He had the perfect wife and perfect kids. And of course, that's not reality. And they bring that to the TV show because we see him shouting at his kids for saying something stupid or saying something to his wife that he regrets. And it just shows him as a very flawed, very layered man who's struggling to cope with what happened to them whilst living in the present. And yet he can't let go of the past. And it's this permanent nightmare that hangs over him, that wakes him up in the middle of the night, and no matter what he does, he can't shake it off. And so it's this great exploration of violence and of war and of someone coming home after war and living with PTSD and all the effects. And it's just a fascinating show that isn't just him killing someone every episode, because that would just be boring.
And it's not just him. They also show you that coming home from war and PTSD through the eyes of other vets throughout the show as well. And so you see how it impacts different people from different walks of life and how they deal with it or don't deal with it. And it becomes this really strong theme throughout that I was not expecting at all. And I was really impressed with.
Cool. That I'm glad to hear two good positive things about it, because I think when it came up, I was in the middle of something, another series. And when I went to pick the next show that I was going to watch, I was like, oh, I'll put that one on hold because it seemed very grim. And I heard mostly good things about it. But yeah, after Iron Fist, I was a little
here's the best thing. Here's the best thing, John. There is no Danny Rand in this show.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. Not to get on a anti-Iron Fist rant, but yeah, that did hurt the Marvel net. They were sort of excuse the pun, but they were kind of bulletproof for a while up until Iron Fist, and now they're that's really sorry. That did really not mean that. Really did. But they were. It was just like, oh, the Marvel shows are great. And, you know, I mean, a couple little it's like, oh, they get a little slow by the end of the season. They could probably cut a couple episodes out. But, you know, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Luke Cage, overwhelmingly positive reviews. And then Iron Fist was so bad that it really, really hurt, I think. But cool. I will definitely put that up there. I do want to catch up with that. And I think Jessica Jones season two, there's a trailer that just dropped.
There's a trailer now. Yep.
Yeah, it's coming soon. I think it's March.
Okay,
it
right, so I got to catch up.
And I did see an article that said Disney is not planning on pulling Defenders from Netflix.
Saw that, yeah.
When they launched their streaming scene. So it looks like they will stay at Netflix for a while.
Excellent. Yeah, well, it makes sense because I think they're trying to keep that mostly family friendly. I think that's what they're going to be doing with their new platform. I think it's going to be more family friendly, for lack of a better word, Marvel stuff, and they're going to have Star Wars shows and everything else. So I think they're going to keep it more in the PG-13 and safer route. So,
So you don't think they're working on a Game of Thrones spinoff with George R.R. Martin called, you know, Red Weddings?
I don't think they're going to be doing that, honestly. I really don't. Cool. I can't wait to get to that now. It's so much good stuff. Patrick, what's your pick this week?
Well, I'm flipping my pick because of our guest. I always write down what I'm going to pick as we're recording. And given that our guest is in the UK, I decided to flip my picks and talk about a show that popped up on Prime and I believe is also on Sky. It's one of their first collaborations together, and it's called Britannia. And I don't know if either of you have seen or heard of this, but it's a series set in, I believe, AD 40. I wrote it down. Hold on. AD 43. And it's about the Roman conquest of Britain. And the Druids trying to stop them. And I watched the first couple episodes and they're fairly intense and it's just really, really well done. And so I'm suggesting that if you have Prime or if you're over the sea and you have Sky, you might check the show out because it seems like it's pretty good. I can't speak to accuracy on stuff, but you know, cause they always take a little bit of liberty with it, but it seems to be in the vein of a lot of the kind of historical dramas that have been happening recently, like Vikings and The Last Kingdom and stuff like that, but set in with this Roman conquest. You know, they basically start off with, you know, Julius Caesar went to went to Britain and turned around and ran back to Rome, and now they're back. And it just seems like an interesting show. The cultures are very interesting to me. They're using very cool languages, especially for the Druids, and it's just good. So I recommend people check it out.
Nice. Cool. My pick will be fast because we talk about it every week, it seems. And that is the Babylon's Ashes. That's book 6, I believe, in the James S. A. Corey Expanse novels. I've been burning through those. The past 3 audiobooks I've listened to, 3, 4 now maybe, I think, have been those. And they keep getting better. They really do. This is, I think, my favorite one now. And I've liked them all 5-star ratings for me. But it's great just the way that they're pulling it together. I love it. And here's my big recommendation, because I've been doing them as audiobooks and I still read. I read ebooks and I read print books too. So I'm not an audio only person. But everybody, if you're not listening to audiobooks, you probably get that Audible ad everywhere you go on the internet. I guess you get like a 30-day free trial or something and you get a free book to start. Do the free trial, get Leviathan Wakes. These are Orbit books, by the way. I did check. So just keep the Orbit theme going.
My editors will be pleased.
Yes. Just go and get Leviathan Wakes as your free book. And if you don't like audiobooks, then you're probably not going to like audiobooks too much because you would just get sucked in. Jefferson Mays, who does the voice acting, is incredible. And you just get so hooked into it. And I'm just so into that world right now. And I have the most recent book queued up. Persepolis Rising is the next one, and I'm going to start that this weekend. And it's great. So Babylon's Ashes. If you haven't been reading them, go back to Leviathan Wakes. Start. You will.
That's
not
awesome.
It.
And I just want to say, you know, to anyone from the offices of Orbit who's listening, if you need our address to send the check, please just send me an email.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's good. Okay. You know, we can work that out, you know, off air. That's good too. But okay. Yeah. Now, Stephen, today our main topic is going to be comics. You're a big comics fan. You write some comics. And, you know, you sent the story about Bendis and sort of his switching sides. So maybe we could start if you could just kind of give a little bit of your fandom of comics and writing and how it affects all of your writing, because I imagine there are parallels between writing comics and writing novels.
Yeah, so I've been reading comics pretty much since I was very, very small. It started with things in the back of the paper, you know, the kind of comic strips, and then we had some UK comics, and then this shows my age. The newsagents, or, you know, kind of 7-Eleven, I guess you call them, you could go in and pick up a comic book, and that's how it started. You'd pick up one comic, and it would be X-Men 132, and then you'd go a couple of weeks later and be X-Men 150, and you'd just work it out. You just skip the issues, you try and piece the story together, and that's how it started for me. And pretty much since I've been about 8 or 10, I've been reading comics. Started with DC, and then it's just broadened out into everything. And then now I read the main two, Marvel and DC, but also across independent publishers too. Do you guys, when did you start?
Oh, wow. Long time ago.
Yeah.
I think my first comic book was I actually had 2 comics that were bought at the same time in 77 or 78. There was a Spider-Man comic book and a adaptation of Star Wars from Marvel that my family gave me to read as we were driving cross country from Chicago to Fresno, California.
Wow.
And I remember reading the Spider-Man comic and then staring out the window as we were passing telephone poles and kind of daydreaming that Spider-Man was swinging on webs between the telephone poles going cross country with us.
Nice. I actually read comics in a very small window, and it was when I was in college. I never read them as a kid. A bunch of my college friends did turn me onto it. Now, this is talking 92 through like 96 or so. Weird time for comics, because kind of the height in some ways, but also when many of the creators were jumping ship from Marvel and going over to Image or other creator-owned lines. And so you had some great comics, especially great art, but it was a difficult time to be a reader of it because you'd get really into a creative team on X-Men, and then those guys would go and go to an Image comic and start their own thing. So I felt like half of reading comics at that time was a lot of kind of throwaway issues when they were going from one creative team to another, which I think is what mostly led me to stop collecting. Now, have you collected the whole time, Stephen, since you were a kid?
I started off as a reader, and then I became a proper collector, where I'd go through the bins looking for missing issues. But I've definitely moved away from that now and just become a reader again. I don't worry too much about getting all the back issues and things.
Do you read digitally now, or do you still read paper?
Both. I tend to pick up new series digitally, and if I enjoy them and I know they're not going to go anywhere, so if it's the latest Spider-Man book, there's always going to be a Spider-Man book. I don't need to worry about supporting the creators as much as if it's an Image book and it's a 5-issue thing, and if it goes well, they'll do another 5, I'll pick it up regularly. But for some of the more popular series at Marvel and DC, I'll just pick up the trade. So a bit of both, really.
And how is your experience reading digitally? It's something that I have been curious about getting into, but never really pulled the trigger in terms of like reading on an iPad or anything like that.
It's strange because the iPad is just slightly too small for the average comic book page. Mm-hmm. If you zoom in slightly and you get rid of the panel borders, then it's the right size. But I can't read comics on my phone. It just is too small for me. And I can't do panel to panel progression, which I know some people like. But for me, you turn over a comic book page and the whole page is presented as one thing, which is also then broken down into panels. So reading it one piece at a time just doesn't work for me at all. But it's very handy if you're traveling somewhere and you want to take a stack of comics. You don't need to load your bag with 7 or 8 trades, you just have your iPad. So it's functional and for that sort of technology way. But sometimes you just want the physical thing in my hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's still the way that many people, like I know some people are big fans of the digital thing and have the Comixology subscription or the Marvel thing or what have you, and it seems to work for them. And you know, for the most part, my comic reading these days is not nearly what it was once, but it's basically just picking up the trades after the fact, which I know doesn't help the creators all that much. You got to buy the floppies to really kind of support them and whether they even get to trades. But I'm usually a couple years behind on comics. You said something earlier, which I thought was really interesting. Such a different time that, you know, you'd pick up X-Men 137 and then you'd pick up X-Men 150. That's how just the things were. It's hard to even though we lived through that time. Right now, you can get, especially if you're willing to pay for it, you can get anything you want. A TV show that you like, boom, it's all on Netflix, or it's all, you could just buy the season on Amazon or what have you. A book series you like, oh, your bookstore doesn't have them, just order them all on Amazon. You know, back in the day, it was like searching for gold. You would just, you know, pick up here and there wherever you can find things. And like you said, you couldn't find certain things. They were impossible to get. It was a very different time. But kind of, you know, I miss that time in one way, but I'm sort of glad to be living in these times too. I don't know how you feel about that.
I used to ride my bike to Long's Drugs in Fresno by my house once a week and turn the squeaky magazine rack thing that they had. It would as you're turning
spin
it.
A rack.
Yeah, looking for issues of Wolverine. Because they had started, you know, the Wolverine, Marvel Presents Wolverine. Because I had, from 77 to the mid-80s, I didn't buy any comic books until someone bought me Silent Interlude, that issue of G.I. Joe by Larry Hama. And that rehooked me immediately, and I started going and buying whatever kind of comics I could get at that Long's Drugs. And it was 90% Archie, Veronica, Betty, and Jughead. And then they would have a few little Marvel titles here and there, like X-Men, like Wolverine, like Spider-Man, and G.I. Joe, and I would get those. And it's like that time is completely gone now, because most parents won't even let their kids ride their bike off by themselves. You know, and I used to just hop on the bike and leave, and then I'd come back with some comic books.
Yeah. You just had to make do with whatever you could find. But so where I'm from, my town that I grew up in is a very small town on the coast. And when I think I was 13, we got our own comic book shop, which that was unprecedented. There wasn't one in any of the other 10 towns around me. Why we suddenly got one, I didn't know and I didn't care, but I loved it. And when I say it was small, I'm not kidding. You could get 6 people in the shop and then that was it. Someone else had to leave. It was there was a normal shop and then next to it was this kind of secondhand extra bit that they didn't really know what to do. But this guy said, no, I'll rent it and I'll make it into a comic shop. And it was packed with racks and, you know, monthly titles. And then that was it. You go in, you get your comics, you have a conversation, you talk to the 5 people, then you leave because someone else is queuing to get in the door. That's how small it was.
Well, we had at the time on television, the Transformers had come on. Mm. And you had UHF and VHF, right? And the most of the quote-unquote main channels that you could get went up to like channel 26. But there was this outlier independent channel out on 53 that I would work my antenna to get because they had a show called Robotech. And I was into this new show, Robotech, way more than Transformers. And I had to choose because they were on at the same time. And I always chose Robotech and not Transformers. And they had a commercial for a place in Clovis, because I was living in Fresno. And Clovis is like next door to Fresno. And they had a commercial for this place called Sierra Comics and Cards. And the commercial was how you can get all of your Robotech stuff at Sierra Comics and Cards, including Robotech comic books, Robotech toys, games, blah, 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 blah. I immediately started begging my mom to take me to Sierra Comics and Cards. I had never heard of any such store ever. And it was a bit of a drive. It was like a 30-minute drive to get out there. But she drove me out there one day, and it was Nirvana. It was a comic book store. And I didn't even know there were that many comic books in my life. And I walked through and I started picking all these things. And she's like, no, you're picking way too many comic books. You know, you get like $20 max. And I went through and I picked a bunch of comic books, including a couple of Robotech comics. And I found DNA Agents from Eclipse at the time. And I found Starjammers and a bunch of stuff that I probably shouldn't have been reading at that age, but I got it anyway and mom didn't care. And that became a routine for me to go out there to Sierra Comics and Cards. And then I found out about the Saver program. You just basically tell them what you want, and they pull it and put it in a box for you. And when you show up, they just hand it to you. That was the coolest thing I'd ever heard of in my life.
Yeah, that's where comic stores get you. Because then you miss a couple of weeks, and then you have $150 worth of comics sitting there that you're on.
Well, and here's the thing.
It's true.
And here's the thing. Sierra Comics and Cards closed eventually, and I started going to Dave's Comics and Cards. And when I moved from Fresno to Tennessee in 99, I never closed my account with Dave's. So I'm sure that he has kept 18 years worth of comics in the back for me, and he's just waiting for me to come pick them up.
Nice.
It's a scary
Stephen thought. Pointed out a story that I think would be quite a bit of interest to talk about. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about it. It's about Brian Michael Bendis joining DC. So maybe you can give us a little bit of background on this story, Stephen, and how that's impacting comics right now.
Yes. So Brian Bendis started in independent comics. He was writing and drawing his own. Then he got picked up to do some Image stuff. This is way back in the day. He did things like Sam and Twitch. And then from there, he moved to Marvel, where he's been for the last 18 years, which it sounds unbelievable, but that's how long it's been. He's done some of his own comics alongside that, and I'm sure he's had offers from other places. But if there's anybody who could say he's been an architect at Marvel Comics, it's Bendis. Because when the Marvel films started, they had something which they called, I think it was like the writers panel or writers brain trust, and they got 5 or 6 of the top comic book writers to have their input on the early scripts. So Bendis, alongside people like Brubaker and Matt Fraction, gave notes to the first Iron Man film. I think it was the first maybe 6 or 7 Marvel films. And since he's been at Marvel, he's created a whole bunch of different things, like Jessica Jones. That we talked about the TV series. That was created by Bendis. He also created Riri Williams, who's a new Iron Patriot character. He created Miles Morales in the Ultimate Universe as a new Spider-Man. He wrote he started in the Ultimate Universe and wrote Spider-Man back then. So he's written pretty much everything under the sun at Marvel. And now he's moved to DC.
It's a big switch. So why do you think the move? Why do you think that he decided to go over to DC?
I was listening to an interview with him yesterday on another podcast, and he talked about this, and he said he kind of felt that he'd done everything. He'd written all of the main characters that he'd wanted to. They sort of offer him the box of toys and say, right, pick what you want and go and play and write a story about that. And he did. He did Daredevil, something like 50 issues right at the beginning, and he created stuff, and he's done all sorts of things. And he's originally from Cleveland, I believe, and he's got deep roots there, and he was visiting there, I think it was last year or the year before, and he saw all of the Superman stuff, and it touched him because of his heritage and the Superman heritage, and he thought, why have I never written this character? Why have I never actually said yes to DC? So I think lots of things came together, and he thought, yeah, now's the time. And he's going to be writing Superman starting this year at DC.
That's great. Now, do you think that will have any spillover into the DC movies? Do you think that'll have a positive impact in that direction?
At the moment, he said he's only working on the comics. So someone asked this and said, are you doing TV and animation and film stuff? And he said, no, at the moment, he's focusing on... He's doing both Superman titles. So he's going to be writing Action Comics and Superman. One will focus on Superman. The other one will focus on Clark Kent and the sort of reporter side, I believe, because he's very much interested in that sort of stuff. But he's also curating a brand new line of comics for DC, some of which he will write and some of which he'll just kind of shepherd through. And he's self-publishing through DC some of his other content. So I think with all of that going on for the first few years, he's going to be pretty busy and he won't have time to look at the TV and film stuff.
That's too bad. Because I was going to say, it's obviously the... Other than Wonder Woman, the most of the DC films in recent years have been not reviewed very positively. Let's just put it that way. Well, Stephen, you had picked the Punisher as your pick earlier in the show. What's your feeling? Do you watch the DC TV shows, the ones that are on, they're on the CW over here? I don't even know if you get them over there, but I'm sure you can get them on Netflix or what have you. Have you kept up to date with The Flash and Arrow and that and those shows?
Yeah, when they first started, it was Arrow that started it off, I think.
That's why it's called the Arrowverse.
Yeah, and this is after 10 years of Smallville, remember? We had that 10 years waiting for him to put on a cape.
and incidentally, they recently tied Supergirl to Smallville.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because Supergirl needed some information, and she said Clark's old friend Chloe can help us, and she reached out to Chloe.
They never
showed Chloe on screen, but Chloe sent them the information they needed.
Ah, okay.
Which I thought was fascinating.
Well, that's one of those weird things where they created a character in a TV show and then she turned up in the comics.
Yes. Well, like Harley Quinn.
Exactly. That was created in the animated show by Paul Dini.
And then ruined in the comics.
And then it came to comics and then into film and then back into animated. So
yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So I started watching with Arrow and then we expanded to Flash, Legends and Supergirl. I think the quality is varying on all of them at the moment. I think some of them are doing quite well. I'm still enjoying them. Some of them I'm not enjoying. Some of them I watch out of habit. But with so much other TV on at the moment, I think some of them are going to drop off my list very soon.
I think there
are... I recently posted on Facebook like a couple days ago that Spartan's helmet is the stupidest helmet in all of the Arrowverse. Because... they give John Diggle a bunch of shit, and they say, John, you know, you need something to protect your identity so that Lila and the baby aren't in danger. You know, just like, you know, Ollie needs to be wearing a mask, not just the hood. You know, you need something. And so he comes up with a helmet that covers his face, and he has a visor, and there's lights inside the visor shining on his face and in his eyes. Mm-hmm. And he's running around at night with lights in his eyes, shooting people. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's like, this is the stupidest thing ever. You can't see what you're doing because you've got lights shining in your eyes, and all the lights illuminate your face inside the mask so everybody can see who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's... As I've mentioned previously, I haven't been watching them in season. Last summer, I watched them all on Netflix, all four shows, and it's a lot to keep up with. When you binge them all like that, it's not too bad, and I enjoyed them. I really did, but it's a lot now. It's a lot, and I've been seeing. You know, I keep up to date on all the genre blogs, and so I don't go for spoilers, obviously, but it seems like Supergirl is doing some interesting things, or at least some of the blogs seem to be pointing towards that, and it seems like good stuff is still going on, but it's quite a bit. And I know they have Black Lightning now as well, which is not yes. part of the Arrowverse, like, but maybe is. I don't know. I know it wasn't supposed to be, but now there might be some ties to it. So I'm not really sure what's going on with that one. Although that
well, they've already established that the multiverse exists, so they don't have to put Black Lightning inside of Arrow's Earth. They can make it Earth, you know, 29.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because Supergirl isn't in the same universe. Because every time they do a crossover, someone has to punch a hole in the
right.
universe.
Correct.
Right. You know, that kind of stuff. So.
And I mean, if comics has taught us anything at all, punching holes in the universe never has bad consequences.
Yeah, it's not like Superboy did it and destroyed the multiverse. No.
Exactly.
No, never happened.
We were talking about Bendis, and we were talking about the TV stuff. One of the stories that came out over the summer, I believe, which I don't think we ever talked about on the show, Patrick, but I wanted Steven's opinion on it, is that Netflix bought Millar World. Over the mm-hmm. summer, and I guess that's the Kingsman, although they don't have the rights to that because obviously that's already out in certain movie studios. What are your thoughts on, I don't know if you know much about that, Stephen, but do you have any thoughts on Netflix buying Millar World?
Yeah, so Mark Miller's a very, very creative guy. He's very good at doing...
He's pretty kick-ass.
Yeah, very good. Well done. I could say he's my nemesis, but that'd just be too cheesy. He's very good at very quick, high concept things. And I mean, when he was doing it at Marvel, he did it really well then. So he sort of pitched something that became, for me, one of the best Wolverine stories ever, which was Old Man Logan. And the new film is sort of loosely based on that, which I think is also the best X-Men film we've had.
I agree.
And so, at the same time as doing that, he was doing his own stuff, and he'd sort of say, what if Batman was an absolutely horrible person, and that's how he got Nemesis? Or what if someone actually tried to go out and fight crime in a spandex suit, and then you get Kick-Ass? So he's very good at these super high concept things, which work in TV and then in film. And so I think they're taking all of the other ideas that he's got in the works, and then they're going to translate them into TV shows, which... If they do short versions, so no, Netflix do like 10, 12, 13 episodes, I think that would work. But doing like 22 episodes, I just don't see it working very well.
I don't think they'll do that. I think they'll keep it short like they have.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think they want their... It's kind of like what they've done with everything else in terms of their original content. They want their own Marvel. Now they have their own Marvel that they're going to try to build it out from there. So it's interesting. Interesting. Well, we could just keep going on and on with the comics, but eventually we have to call it a day. So, Stephen, before we head out... I want to direct people to your Twitter. You're at Steve Arian. So it's STEVEARYAN. If people want to follow you on Twitter, you have your books out, your trilogy, your Mage trilogy, and you have the new prequel coming out as well. Anything else you want to let our listeners know before we have to go?
No, just my website's Stephen-Arian.com, and you can follow my blog on there for all the news.
Awesome. And are you going to have any con appearances coming up that our listeners might be able to check you out at?
I'll probably be at some UK conventions, but I've not made it to an American convention yet. But I guess we'll see. Maybe one day. I hope so.
Well, follow him on Twitter. I'm sure you'll tweet about it if you end up coming over here. Stephen, that was great. Thank you so much for coming on. For us, once again, if you enjoy the show, please consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, anything you want to leave people with?
Excelsior! But beyond that, I did want to say that it is Hugo voting nomination season, and nominations for the Hugo Awards has opened. If you are a Hugo voter, please consider the Functional Nerds. We've been doing this for 350 episodes. You're listening to the episode 351. John has never, ever, I don't believe, been to Worldcon, and this might actually get him to go.
If we get nominated, I'll find a way to go.
Exactly.
If we get nominated, I'll find. Where is it this year?
San Jose.
All right, I could do that.
Yeah. Okay. Go to the coast. Come to the coast. Have a good time.
Yeah, look, we don't do the show to win awards, but I feel like we've done the show a long time and we've had a lot of great authors on. I would love the show to find its way into more people's ears. And if we get nominated for a Hugo, I think that would help more people find out about the show. And I think that would be good for the community. So there you go.
And we have tons of friends in the podcast community who also deserve nominations.
Absolutely.
And if you just search on Twitter right now, I mean, everybody's pretty much just putting up their hands and saying, you know, we'd love to at least be recognized. So I think that's worth it. And go out there and check out all the people that are doing podcasts.
Absolutely. Well, Stephen, thank you again for joining us.
My pleasure.
And everybody else, have a great week and we'll talk to you soon.
I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
Smoke.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.